Thank you again to everyone that read to help us open the meeting. I'll take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Extend a huge welcome to the visitors with us tonight, and particularly so to any newcomers who might be new to Narcotics Anonymous in our meeting this evening. We hope you hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. As I said, we are a speaker meeting, and it does fall for me today to introduce our speaker. And I'm so pleased that this individual's come along and to share with us tonight. We met a couple of 3 years back. We've known each other a while online, and some might remember I did a mad road trip in the US a couple of 3 years ago, and this lady invited me into her home, and I became part of their family. And that was more about them than it was about me. It was more about her than it was about me that made me feel so welcome and so comfortable. I was just blown away, and it was a fantastic experience. I love her to bits, and I'm going to just leave it at that and introduce you to Colleen, who's come along to share her experience, strength, and hope with us for 40 or 45 minutes, or whatever she's comfortable with. So, Colleen, the floor is yours. Please share with us. Thank you.
I'm really, really grateful to be alive at a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I am so incredibly blown away by this whole format, and very grateful to be in a room with you, Steve, and with other people that I haven't met yet that are just my family that I haven't sat at the table with yet. It always takes me a minute because this is just so different for me, and I have struggled since the pandemic has hit, but I fight and I show up and I do what I need to do, because without Narcotics Anonymous, I wouldn't be where I am or who I am. It's really funny. I asked Steve today, you know, what the topic was, and he said that the topic was me. And I jokingly responded, I know her. And then I, after I said that, like, I thought about it, and like, it kind of brought tears to my eyes about what a gift that is, that I actually know her. Because when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I had no idea who I was, what I was doing, where I was going. I knew who I thought I was. I knew who I thought I wanted to be. But I had no connection whatsoever to myself, to my heart, to anything. Just no connection. A life of pretending I was somebody that I wasn't. I was a true chameleon when I was out there. And I had no grasp on who Colleen was. And I didn't even know that that was an option. There were just simple things I didn't even understand in the world. I remember sitting in someone's home, because they had a home, and at that time I really didn't. And I was sitting in their home, and they were making cocktails, and they had these glass stirrers with these little glass animals on the tip of the stirrer. And I remember saying to them, one day I want this in my house. Like, that was something of value to me. It's so bizarre when I think about it. And I meant it with everything. I went to sleep that night, and I thought, how come I don't have stuff? How come I don't have things? Without even thinking, as I lay on the floor, because I don't have a bed, like, where is Colleen, and what happened to me? My experience, strength, and hope. So I'll tell you a little bit about who I was before I got here, how I got here, and who I am today, because that's what I've been taught. And, you know, I'm not going to do this, you know, when I, you know, go back. I'm just going to tell you, man, like, what active addiction brought to me. Active addiction brought me to my knees when I thought I was already on my knees. I married a man that I met in a barroom brawl. He was a dealer, and I thought I landed in heaven. And I immediately got pregnant, and I had our first beautiful daughter, and I got pregnant again, and we had our second beautiful daughter, and we lived a life of chaos and violence and pain and agony, and I didn't really know that there was a different way. I was in an abusive relationship. When I first came to NA, I used to cry all the time about, like, my husband, he beat me. My husband, he did this. I was a really good victim. I didn't know that I was playing victim, but I was a really good victim, which made me also a really good manipulator. And when you don't have the awareness about that stuff after getting clean, I wanted to argue. I'm not a manipulator. I'm not a victim. But that was the truth. I was really good at manipulating people. I was really good at getting what I needed, what I thought I needed. And I was really good at playing the victim role, which played right into my manipulation. And I would just come in here and just cry, cry about what he did to me and never take ownership of me. And, you know, being a woman that was physically abused, I played that. I used that. But the part that I forgot to tell you is that I also was physically abusive. I, you know, a lot of people don't think that's possible. And the only difference was, is that I didn't win. Like, I struck, I spit, I kicked, but I never won. He was physically stronger than me. So like, that was the end difference, is that I'm the one that walked away with the black eyes. And he walked away with whatever he walked away with. I can't speak for him, but, and I used that and I played that. And I was in my home. I used to walk around in my home because people came to us for what they needed. And I would walk around and hold this pillow over my chest because I thought I was going to die. I thought my heart was going to pound out of my chest. And even as I say this, and I sit here in my kitchen by myself staring at a blank screen, I can't believe that was me. I feel so grateful and so blessed that I don't live a life like that today. And I used to walk around with this pillow, and we bought this wrecked house that we were going to rebuild and sell, and then buy two wrecked houses and rebuild and sell. You know how we are, we dream. And I walked around this house that had sheetrock, sometimes no sheetrock, that had sheets hanging over bedroom doors, that had plywood for floors because we bought this wrecked house and that's where it stayed. And it was full of people, and I would walk up to people and I would ask them for a hug because I thought I was going to die. I thought my heart was going to fall out of my chest. And I would ask them for a hug, and from the state that they were in, they didn't want to touch anything or do anything, but I was Kevin's wife and you were in my home, so you were going to hug me. So I would get these like half-assed hugs where someone would like reach their arm around my back and pat me on the back really hard and fast and, you know, and like move on to the next person. And I just had this need to just be embraced and feel held. And I would hold that pillow over my heart and I would use with the other hand. And I would make myself get sick so I can continue to get high. And that was my life for a really long time. My kids were just not a part of it. If you came into my house, I would ask you to put peanut butter on bread for them because I was incapable of taking care of them. But I didn't know that I was incapable of taking care of them. The VCR and Barney, that little horrible purple dinosaur, were my kids' babysitters. And one night I picked up the phone in the middle of the night. I don't know what time it was. And I dialed the operator and I said, I can't stop getting high and I need help. And she gave me the Narcotics Anonymous helpline. At that time, I lived in New York. And when I called that number, it was a building and people sat in that building 24/7 and there were multiple phones in there and they answered the phone and I got a live person. And that person spoke to me and listened to me and talked to me until I was done talking and told me that they would meet me at the meeting the next day, told me where it was. And I told them I would be there. And of course I didn't go. But what happened was, I used that phone number over and over and over again. And every time when I thought I was going to die and those hugs weren't working and nobody wanted to hug me and people were over me, I would pick up that phone and I would call and someone would answer the phone and they would tell me the same thing that they told me last time, that I didn't have to live like this, that they would meet me at a meeting and that it was going to be okay. And I did that for a long time. And the number it in my recovery, I really don't know how long I did it, a year, you know, 9 months, 18, I don't know. I did it for a long time until one day I finally showed up at a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And it was on a Saturday afternoon and it was in Long Island. And I walked into that meeting and this guy was standing in front of the room and he had a black shirt and black jeans on. And I don't remember much about that very first meeting. I just know that people were there and they were friendly and smiling and laughing. And I just thought they were all full of crap, but something happened. When they went around and introduced themselves, I lied about my name at first, like as if I don't know why, but I did. And then like I had to be a drama queen and I couldn't just say I was an addict. I had to say I was doubly cross addicted. Like every time I went to this meeting, I would say something different to try and impress you, to let you know just how badass I was. And every time I went to that meeting, the same guy would be standing up there and he'd always be wearing this black shirt and these black jeans. And I just thought like he was NA. I thought this guy started NA and it was in this little church in Huntington and that he was Mr. NA, whatever Mr. NA was, and that these were the people. I had no idea that I could go across the pond and go to a meeting, or that Michigan had a meeting, or that like England had a meeting. I had no idea. I was clueless. I had no idea that I could go to a convention in Maryland, or I can, you know, go to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting in California. And I just kept coming back, and I kept using. And I would go home and I would tell one of my roommates, my sister-in-law, about you guys. And I would say, you know, they sit around and they talk about stuff that we talk about, but I think they actually really do it. Like, I don't think they sit around thinking they're going to solve the world problems. I think they actually are like doing something. And I convinced her to go to a meeting with me one Saturday, and we would go out in the parking lot and get high and talk about you guys and discuss who we thought was whatever hot, who we thought whatever, you know, whether it was real or not. But you stimulated a conversation into sick and suffering women. And I did that for a long time. And I would just go to the meeting, and sometimes I would go to a Friday night meeting, but I would use all week. I would even use before I went, I would use after I went. No one ever told me not to come. They just, you know, they also didn't really, they weren't my friends. I remember sitting in the car and saying to Nancy, my sister-in-law, that I think I figured it out. Like, one day it clicked for me. I said, we have to actually hang out with these people in order for this to work. Like, we have to be their friends. And we laughed and got high and went home. So, and one night I was out with my kids, and, you know, because that's what most normal people do. They go get high with their kids. And I was at someone's house, and I was there for the weekend. I kind of disappeared. I already had moved out because my husband was the problem, and I lived in this basement apartment, and I slept on the floor, and I didn't take care of my kids, and I lost my job, and I lost my car, and I didn't have a phone. And I was at this, you know, childhood friends of ours house, and we were all partying, and, you know, it was cool because our kids were there. We had it all under control. And I was going out on one of those nights that they were done partying and I wasn't, and they lent me their car. And I told him not to worry, that I was just gonna go have one drink. I was gonna go meet someone and have one drink. And I don't really remember much of the night. I remember looking at my friend and telling her that I was seeing double and I had to leave, which is like crazy when you think about that. People like that, like that, no one stopped me. And I was driving, and it was a long distance, like a 45-minute ride. And I ended up taking a fence down. I was in a station wagon, and I took in the station wagon. I don't know, last time, you know, the only time, not last time, I went to Ireland. You guys had really tiny cars. A station wagon front end is like the size of a car that I drove when we were in Ireland. And I took down a pole fence, and a pole went right through the front of the car and split the battery in half. And another pole went right through the windshield and landed on the seat next to me, right where the rearview mirror was. And my first thought wasn't, oh, thank you, God, for saving my life. My thought was, I have to buy these people a new windshield. People scooped me up and dragged me to the house. It took about 3 hours for me to remember where I was going or how to get there. And that was really the beginning of my journey in Narcotics Anonymous. I picked up the phone. I called my sister-in-law. I had sat in meetings for long enough where I understood your lingo. And I told them that I told her I relapsed. And she said to me, you never got clean, asshole, and hung up on me. And the thing that blows me away about that today is that she wasn't clean either. She's like, you know, she was out there using, but like, we had been doing this long enough. And I went to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting that night, and I didn't feel like I was the hot girl in the room like I did all the other times. I didn't feel like you guys didn't know what you were doing. I felt scared. I felt lonely. I felt hopeless. I smelled. My hair was huge. The stench was coming out of my pores. I felt shame and guilt and lonely. And I went to this meeting, and for the first time, I raised my hand, and I told you that, because I'm a drama queen. I told you that I was the biggest piece of shit on the face of the earth, and I didn't walk in here tonight. I crawled in here, and I need help, and I don't know what to do. And a girl in front of me raised her hand, and she turned around, and she looked at me. And she said, I admire you. Sorry. I had been thrown out of some of the finest establishments in the area that I lived in. I wasn't welcome anywhere. I wasn't welcome with my family anymore. Nobody believed in me anymore. Nobody wanted to be near me anymore. Not even the people that I was dealing to. And this woman looked at me and she said she admired me, that it took courage for me to open my mouth. And I immediately asked her to be my sponsor. And I already had literature. I used to clean my weed on it, like I never read it. And she got up and she got me all these IPs, and she gave me a basic text, and she told me to call her every day, and she told me not to get high and to call her tomorrow, and she would pick me up to a meeting. And all of a sudden I became mother of the year. I was like, oh, I can't go to a meeting every day. I have kids. And she was like, well, how did you get high? I said, I got high in front of them. So she was like, well, then recover in front of them. And I was like, well, I don't have a car. And she said, so call me up and I'll pick you up. Here's a quarter. And I was like, well, I don't have a telephone. And she was like, well, how did you cop? And I said, I walked to the payphone. And she said, well, walk to the payphone and call me and I'll get you to a meeting. It was like everything that I said to her, she had an answer to. And the answer wasn't what mattered. It was the action behind the answer that mattered. Because when I walked to the payphone and I popped the quarter in and I called her, she came and got me and my children. And she took me to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And every day she would ask me, did I use? And every day I would say, yes, I used. I was so proud of myself that I was being honest. I thought, like, yes, I'm honest, I used. And she couldn't pick me up. She would tell me to call someone else on my list, and they would pick me up. And every day she would ask me if I used, and I would say, yes, I used. And one day she said to me, I'm going to tell you something. And I was just like, waiting. Like I wanted that answer. Like meantime, I lived in this basement apartment and I used to take my children to my husband's house, my house, to go to school because I like he wouldn't allow me. He wouldn't allow me. He threatened my life. He wouldn't allow me to register in the school that I lived in. All this stuff, I gave him a lot of power. And so every day I would get up and I would get on a bus and I would go there and I would bring the kids there and I would get high. And then I would wait for the kids and then go home and, start my nonsense all over again. So she was said, don't go there. Go wake up tomorrow and call another recovering addict and see what they're going to do and go hang out with another recovering addict. And I had been coming, I don't know, maybe 8 days, like, in a row and still using. And so I checked out Vinny because, like, Vinny was really hot. And I really liked Vinny. And I thought he was really sweet. He was always really friendly to me. So I was like, hey, Vinny, what are you doing tomorrow? And he was like, I'm going to court. Want to come? And, like, that's only attractive to a woman in Narcotics Anonymous. So I was like, yeah, Vinny, I'll go to court with you. It's like he picked me up and he drove my kids to the house and we dropped them off and I didn't go inside. And I went to court with Vinny. And the entire time, Vinny talked about his fiance. And he subtly let me know that this was a recovery thing. And we talked about prayer and we talked about God and we talked about spiritual principles and we talked about meetings and there's 12 steps and sponsorship. And I went to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting clean that night. And that was February 8th, 1989. And I have been clean ever since. And I am forever debt in debt to Vinny for picking me up that day and for seeing through my manipulative bullshit and for giving me what I needed that day instead of what I thought I wanted. I needed to become a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I needed to surrender to this horrible freaking disease and I needed to let go. And he gave me that. And that started my journey in Narcotics Anonymous. And my sponsor gave me all the same directions that you guys get, 90 meetings in 90 days. Call someone every day, read out of your literature, journal. And I would go there, like I said, from the very beginning of this, I would go there every day and I would cry. I would sob. I would bring my kids to meetings and they would say, bring toys. And I would bring freaking little drums and little, noisy things. And they'd be like, no, that's no, here. Here's a coloring book for your kids. Like, let your kid color. And I would sit in meetings and sob and people would get up and help me with my children. And I don't know what it's like wherever any of you people live, but where I lived, the women there saved my life by helping me take care of my kids in a meeting because no one was going to watch my kids anymore. Everyone was over they were over what I told them when I dropped my kids off and they didn't come back for 3 days. So I was bringing my kids to meetings every day, and you guys taught me how to be a parent. You took shifts to sit with my kids so we could all get a meeting. You taught me how to have unity and how to take care of other people's kids in the meetings. And if there were six moms in the meeting, we would take turns sitting 15 minutes at a time with all the kids. The meetings were like 2 hours long when I got clean in Long Island. And you stood by me. Everything that you promised me, you showed up and you showed me. People would invite me to dinner to their home. I would go from one meeting to someone's house for dinner and then go to another meeting. Then their teenagers started watching my kids, and I would go to meetings with you know, with them without my kids. And then my sponsor was telling me to get a commitment. I started making coffee at this one meeting. Then I made coffee at this meeting, and before I knew it, I was making coffee at five different meetings. It just was absolutely mind-blowing. In the meanwhile, you guys were teaching me how to be a woman and how to be a parent, and I would come in and I would still do all that crying, like I said before, about what Kevin did to me, and how he did this and how he did that. And it took me a while before I'd be like, yeah, he broke my nose, but I kicked him in the balls first. Like, it took me a while to get to the truth. And it wasn't that I was lying, it's that I created my own truth. So yes, in a way it was a lie, but it wasn't like I'm standing before you and I know that I'm telling you a lie. I was telling you what I told myself for years that was going to be my story. I mean, there are stories that I told for so many years that I started to believe them myself, you know, about accidents that never happened and all kinds of crazy stuff. I just lied so much that they became my truth and my story. So I stopped bringing my kids there. You guys told me if I brought my kids there and anything happened to them, now that I'm clean, I would be responsible and accountable. That I had to be the parent that I thought that a parent should be. I'm sorry, hold on 1 second. Tim, I can't hear. Sorry, someone was playing music in the garage and I couldn't hear. And it totally threw me off. But I stopped bringing my kids over there, and he would call me up and tell me he was going to come to my job because guess what? Now I have a job, right? I got this job at 7-Eleven, which is like, you know, like a fast mart, like someplace that you go in and buy stuff, a small little store that sells a little bit of everything. And I used to go to work at 7-Eleven. He would tell me he was going to come there and he was going to hurt me, but you guys told me that it was going to be okay. And so I stopped bringing my kids there, and I started getting phone calls about, you know, his disease and about what was happening with him, and you know how he was hiding in trees with loaded rifles, and you know talking about the little men that were outside the window, to a point where, I mean, he started telling me I was a Hare Krishna. Like, his view of what Narcotics Anonymous was not the view that it wasn't the reality of what Narcotics Anonymous is. And I ended up calling his family and telling them that he needed help and he was going to die if they didn't help him. And of course, they didn't listen to me. And I just kept doing what you guys told me to do. And you know, the thing about Narcotics Anonymous recovery and being in the process is that when you do the things that are suggested to you, your life changes very quickly for the better. You may not be driving around in a Rolls Royce, but your life, your inside out, changes very quickly. You have people in your life, you have friends, you have purpose, you start praying, you know, you start meditating, you are focusing on the positive, not on the negative. You have someone who's teaching you about steps and teaching about spiritual principles and telling you what the difference between, you know, truth and honesty is, and you're in this room with people who have the same experience as you, which is priceless to be with somebody that really understands who I am. It's the first time that, like I said, that I had, you know, sheets for curtains in my kitchen and not like you guys understood it. If I sat there and I said that to anybody else, they would look at me like I was foreign. You understood how proud I was when I bought my kids' shoes instead of smoking the money. Like, you guys got it. You got everything about me. And I didn't have that anywhere. I didn't have that anywhere else. So with 59 days clean, I already had become a different woman than I was. I've become a different mother than I was. You were teaching me. I was honest about what I knew and what I didn't know, and I was open to learn. You know, honesty, open-mindedness, willingness. I had the willingness to do what my sponsor told me to do. You told me to get commitments. You told me to come early. You told me to stay late. You told me to get phone numbers. You told me to reach out. You told me to stay away from the men. Didn't really listen to that, you know. You told me to, you told me to go out to the diner afterwards. You know, you told me to share my truth. And so at 59 days clean, I was already a different person than I was when I walked into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And you don't see it. You don't see it at first. You don't. You just can't see it. But today I see it so clearly. And I walked into the room that night and I walked into my home group. It was a Friday night. I had a home group. I had commitments. I had people that loved me. I had people I hung out with. I had people I broke bread with. I had people that loved my children. My children loved them. They would walk into a room and run up to people and jump into their arms and hug them. It was like absolutely amazing. And I was living in sadness that night, and I was thinking about the disease of addiction. It was the first time that I ever looked at Kevin, my husband, as an addict. I always looked at him as the enemy, and I was very sad for where he was at. I got to go in this meeting and cry, and my sponsor walked in, which I cried all the time. Like, they called me the Lady of Misery. I cried happy, joy. I just cried. Sad, miserable. I just cried. And, you know, she came in and she asked me what was going on. And we went out into my car and we sat in there for hours. The kids fell asleep in the back seat. And we talked about the disease of addiction and how it has taken, you know, my life and how it was taking his life. And it was the first time that I could actually see how it was living on him, how it had him, how he was in the grips. And I also came to the realization that I didn't hate him, that I loved him as a man, but like I wasn't in love with him. Like I wasn't going to ever be his wife again. If he got clean, it didn't matter. Like that, none of that stuff mattered. What mattered that he was living in the grips and that I felt sad for him. And that I saw his pain. I saw his disease. And we talked and talked and talked, and it was a very strange night. It was like a horror movie. It was pouring rain and it was lightning and thunder. And I went home with my kids. I now moved in with my mom. My mom had already seen the difference in me. And I drove home with my kids, and it was somewhere around midnight. And I'm carrying my daughter in from the pouring rain. And my mom comes running out and she's yelling to come that Claire called, Kevin's sister, and that like he overdosed. And I'm like, you know what? Like, I'm carrying my kid in from the rain and I'm getting on the phone. And I'm like, what the hell is wrong with him? Maybe he's going to get it now. Maybe he's going to understand. And what it was is that Kevin was 29 years old and our children were 6 and 3 years old. And he was having a psychotic episode and he ate an 8-ball of cocaine and his heart exploded. By time they called for help, the ambulance came and he was armed and they couldn't get in the house until the police came. By time the police came, it was too late. And everything kind of went black and blank on me. And I started screaming. And I remember like flipping over the coffee tables and just really like going ballistic. And my mom just stood there and started saying, call your sponsor, call your sponsor. And this is a woman that I had scarred and betrayed and did not want me to be in her home, didn't believe in anything, but she had seen the miracle of Narcotics Anonymous work in my life. And I called my sponsor. And as NA is here and everywhere, my sponsor and several women showed up to my home and drove me to the hospital. And I got to say goodbye to him, even though he was no longer there. So I didn't know I was going to do that. But I have to tell you, the most important thing for me at that moment was that I wanted to get my 60-day key tag. I wanted my 60-day key tag. I had been a woman who had been not invited or welcome to go, like I said, in all kinds of scuzzy places where I lived or nice places or family. I was welcome nowhere. And I came to these church rooms and these basements and people told me to keep coming back. And then when I started getting clean time, they would announce your clean time at the end of the meeting or at the beginning of the meeting. They would say, anybody with 90 days or under want to announce your clean time. And I raised my hand and said I had a day clean. And you guys freaked out. You clapped and applauded like nothing I've ever seen in my life. And I'm a want more kind of woman, and that fed me, and I wanted more. And I started adding my days together so I could raise my hand and say, you know, that I had 20 days and I had 30 days and I wanted my 60 day key tag. And you guys treated me like I was a freaking rock star when I got that. And when people say that clean time doesn't matter, just because you have clean time, it doesn't mean that you're working a program. But please don't tell a girl who's sitting in this room right now, who is rocking back and forth because she wants another hit and she can't take it and she has a day clean, that clean time doesn't matter. You are welcome here no matter what. This is a revolving door. And if you're still using, I hope that you come back tomorrow alive, and you're welcome here no matter what. But don't tell me that counting my days didn't count. Again, your clean time isn't going to make you who you are. That's the spiritual principles and the steps and the work that you put into it. But don't tell me that sitting and rocking and rolling in my chair through that night to get to my 60-day key tag did not count. If we didn't honor clean time, we wouldn't have key tags. And that's just that's my experience, strength, and hope of what I've been taught. And so, like, that was a long time ago. And like since then, I have had the privilege of growing up in Narcotics Anonymous and raising my family, and you know, now being a grandma. I'm an Uma of having met another man and marrying in recovery very early in recovery. Did not take that suggestion, and we've had quite the journey, and that's okay. But we're married 30 years, and we have three beautiful daughters and two beautiful grandchildren. And we have learned a lot of things in this journey. And I have made, I'm not even going to say mistakes. I've done some sketchy, shady shit in recovery without even really giving it a second thought. You know, I grew up here in recovery, and I've done what I call the rise and fall of Narcotics Anonymous, where, you know, you get really confused when you start getting money and you start throwing it around and you don't pay your bills properly. Like, you can be clean, but like, if you don't pay your bills, they're going to still shut off your phone bill. Like, life on life's terms is still going to happen to you. It's about how you take care of your own backyard. And that's what Narcotics Anonymous has taught me, how to take care of my own backyard. My life is that I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I was told anything I put before my recovery, I better be willing to lose. And, you know, through the years, it used to be like I would miss my kid's birthday because Steve asked me to speak. And I went to a meeting every day for years and years and years. And then as I grew in recovery and I started, my spiritual principles started really not just practicing them, started really living them, I realized that my family is my recovery and that there is a balance. Balance isn't anything I ever understood before I came to NA. You know, I would do service and I would have commitments on, you know, three committees and at my home group and sponsor 30 women. And then I learned, like, let go of commitments and let other people step up and have a balance. My sponsor tells me that I need a committee level commitment and a group level commitment. And that's how I be a productive member of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I sponsor women and I dive in 150%. I don't know how else to do it. And I don't know if that's a character defect or not, but it's who I am. I love too much, and that's okay too. I've learned that some of my character defects, I actually argued about. I really think I embraced them. I used to say I was really nice. I'm just a really nice person, and I was really just a people pleaser. And any one of those character defects that I wouldn't let go of, like, you know, I hid behind fear. You know, I've learned about spiritual principles. Spiritual principles are a funny thing. When we start doing step work, it's also a funny thing. My basic text is my favorite tool. I love my basic text. It's my favorite thing in the whole world. It looks like it went through World War III, and I absolutely love that. And if I'm having a bad day, I can open up that book, and it'll land me on We Do Recover, and I'll get exactly what I need. And I can sit there and just cry and read it. But, you know, spiritual principles, I used to think that, like, writing steps was like a contest. I used to think I needed to be a spiritual guru. I used to think it mattered who, like, if I if if I was friends with the big dogs, if you know what I mean, like if the, you know, the people that we put on the pedestals, I wanted to be with them. I wanted to be at the bottom of their pedestal, which is not their fault. I put them on the pedestal. I used to think a lot of things that I don't think anymore. But the spiritual principles, I used to think it was a contest. I would go through, I wouldn't try and live it and learn it and experience it. I would try and go through and find them in my literature so I can say I knew what the spiritual principles were. And what I've really learned is that there are things that we choose to live by, there are values that we choose to live by. And that it helps us become a better person. Like it's not just the spiritual principles that are written in the, in our literature that we can find. It's anything that is good that I want to be a better woman for. Those are the spiritual principles that I live by. I'm not perfect. I used to think if I made a mistake that like I was a bad addict. Like I'm not a good person. Or if I did something, like I said, I've done sketchy shit before. If I did something sketchy, then you know, oh my God, I really don't deserve to be clean. Like all this nonsense. You know, I'm a human being, and that's not, I'm not using it as an excuse. That's not what I'm saying. But I am a human being that is in a journey, and in that journey, I'm trying to be a better woman every single day. And I think that I have accomplished that. I have friends all over the country and all over the world, people that I trust, and as wide as that is. Like I trust Steve, but there are people in my own backyard that I don't trust. So, I mean, but I'll be there for them. You guys taught me about unconditional love. You taught me that I don't have to invite you to my birthday party, but I'm going to show up for you when the shit hits the fan, because that's what we do. It's not a popularity contest. I used to think it was a popularity contest. I used to judge you for how you responded. You know, I told you in the very beginning, I used to say I was a duly doubly addicted addict and slush, and I used to try and come up with all these really creative things. And this woman, her name was Lady Di, and she came up to me and she said, "You know, that's not unity. We just we oh my goodness, my brain just shut off. We identify ourselves as addicts, and that's all inclusive. And then it doesn't make you different or more special than I am." It says we say our name and then we say that we're an addict, and that's how we identify ourselves. And it's not a show off. She called me right out. It's not a show off thing. You know, it's not that you're better or different. We are all the same. And I remember calling up my sponsor and saying, "Do you know what that bitch, Lady Di, said to me?" And who calls themselves Lady Di anyway? I was like, you know, like, but you know what that bitch said to me? And I told my sponsor, and she said, "Well, that bitch is right." And from that day forward, I identified myself as an addict. But then what I did is I didn't give the same grace to other people that she gave to me by pulling me aside after a meeting and teaching me that. Is I stood on a pedestal and I pointed the fingers at people. And if you said, "Hi, I'm Colleen and I'm an addict and an alcoholic," I would say, "Hi, Colleen. Hi, Colleen." Like, put $2 in the basket. Like, I turned into a real a-hole. I was a real two-year wonder, where if you didn't do NA the way that I believed NA should be, see, now it became Colleen's NA because I knew everything, then you weren't even worth my time. And luckily, I had people in my life that loved me through it, and luckily, I had a sponsor in my life that I was working steps and traditions with, and that she was very, very capable of telling me who I was. Who I was. She was very capable of sitting down with me and letting me know, like, what's going on, Colleen. There was no, it tells us in our literature, in our basic text, that we're each other's ears and eyes. And she was my ears and my eyes. And she, in the most loving way, would be able to call me on my shit. And I needed that. And because of that, and because I wanted more and I wanted to grow, I was able to grow. And what that meant for this addict is that I had to step away from trying to worship people. And I had to start. Like just working on myself and keeping it, you know, keeping it in my own backyard, so to speak. I'm not the addict that's going to sit in a room and watch you nod out and not say anything to you. I'm not going to shame you and ask you to leave, and I'm going to ask you if you need help. I'm going to ask you if you're high, and you're going to lie to me, and you're going to say no, and then I'm going to say, "How are you getting home today? And are you going to be okay?" And I have been called up and told that I was a horrible human being for doing that. And then I've been called up and told, "Thank you for doing that." So I know for me that I don't want to be left alone in my own head and my own disease when I'm sitting in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. If I think everything's okay and it's not, I need I need the experience, strength, and hope of others. And other people believe differently. They believe that, you know, that no, that's not what we're here for. We just sit here and we love you to go through your own journey. But this is the way that I was raised, and the way that I was raised has worked well for me. But I'm not closed-minded where I don't change and I don't grow. I used to think recovery was black and white, and I do understand gray areas today. There are things, spiritual principles are never in conflict with each other. I used to think the traditions were a weapon, not a tool. And I used to use the traditions to try and manipulate the situation. Like I told you earlier, I was a great manipulator. And I'm very capable of being a manipulator today, but I choose not to live that way today. I feel like I've had the opportunity to live 30 different lives here in Narcotics Anonymous. When I talk about the woman that I talked about, and I haven't shared about her for a really long time, the woman who used to put dirty dishes in the oven to hide them as if you weren't going to be able to see what my house looked like when you walked in, who had to chisel the grease and poured up stuff off the oven in order to even attempt to clean it. When I look at that woman, you know, the woman who stole, lied, cheated on her husband, slept with strangers, didn't take care of her children. And I look at the woman that I am today. It's the grace of God and Narcotics Anonymous that I am here today, and I'm able to sit on an iPad and feel a connection to a human being that I've only met for a few days in my life, but know that I trust Steve with everything that I have inside of me, and know that, like, he is my family. That's an incredible gift. If you would have told me, you know, 31 years ago that I was going to have friends, that I was going to trust with everything that I have, that, like, I might only know for a moment, and know that feeling and that heart connection, I would have laughed at you, because I believed I had to give you something in order for you to be my friend. You know, I had to have something that you wanted. And you know what? He does have something that I want. He has a kind, caring, and loving heart. My mother used to tell me water seeks its own level, and I believe that too. And I love the level of water that I seek today. I really do. I am grateful for the woman that I am today. And this is a hard time, man. I got to tell you, every character defect that I thought I put to rest, they used to say in Narcotics Anonymous that I'd be in a meeting and my disease would be doing push-ups in the parking lot. And that's meant many different things to me throughout the years. But right now, what it means to me is that every character defect is coming in and trying to jump on my back and say, you're in a pandemic. I'm in quarantine right now. My daughter, my son-in-law, and my two grandchildren all have COVID, and they live 8 doors down from us, and I'm with them every day. And my 87-year-old mother moved in with us a couple of months ago, and she lives upstairs. And now she has Parkinson's, and I take care of her to the best of my ability. And she's in quarantine from us, and I have to be in quarantine till Tuesday to make sure that I don't have COVID. My sponsor has COVID. She lives in a different state than I do, and she's so weak she can't even walk. She's been to the hospital twice. I sometimes sit in my head and I get very caught up, or I can sit in prayer and meditation. I have been the most spiritual based woman in this pandemic, and I have been the biggest psychotic, crazy ass lady during this pandemic. So I'm going to just keep coming back, and I'm going to let you know that there is a better way to live. And this is truly a life beyond my wildest dreams. And I have joy that I've never had before. And I can feel today, I can feel sorrow, and I can feel everything from joy to sorrow to indifference, and still wake up and become a better woman tomorrow. I just have a life beyond my wildest dreams. If you haven't laughed yet, Narcotics Anonymous, man, keep coming back. If you are bored at what I said, keep coming back. Tomorrow someone will grab you. They'll grab your heart, your spirit. If you haven't heard your story yet, man, keep coming back. If you're sitting in here and you're clean and you're lying and you're, excuse me, you're not clean and you're lying about your clean time, like, keep coming back. If you're new, keep coming back. If you're old, keep coming back. If your ass fell off, pick it up, put it in a paper bag, and keep coming back. I love you guys. Thank you so much.